As the exclusive sponsor of the Grant and Danny radio program, the law firm of Kondorian Murad can guide you and your family in the right direction. They're going to take great care of you. They're going to help you draft your will, set up a trust, create a health care, power of attorney. This is real serious adult stuff. You need someone to help guide you through it, and our guys will take care of the business for you. Schedule a free consultation with our estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. They'll give you a nice discount. kmlawyers.com. We've been talking about training camp today out in Ashburn. Coverage of camp on the Fan is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. And we are pleased to be joined right now by Steve Weiss, who I've known for many, many years, does an outstanding job covering the National Football League. You see him on NFL Network and all over NFL media. And he was just in Ashburn with the Commanders over the weekend. So we wanted to tap into his expertise. Steve, it's Grant and Danny here in D.C. Thank you so much for the time. How you doing?
Grant and Danny, thanks for having me, man.
Pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. So I know you've been busy making the rounds. We'll talk about some of the other stops. But one of the things I love doing is having the national reporters on, because you've got other camps to juxtapose Washington to. What were some of your observations being around Dan Quinn's operation over the weekend?
Yeah, you know, first off, when I was there, they weren't in pads yet. I think today was their first day in pads. So, you know, when you see these teams, you know, basically going through touch football, you look at kind of how they pace their practice, how they, you know, during kicking game, what are other guys doing over to the side? And you see Dan Quinn, he runs a really organized and sharp choreographed practice, right? It's not very long. So guys are always doing something to do recognition drills, you know, quarterback recognizing coverages or alignments, offensive linemen doing things to recognize different types of games defensive fronts will run, and so on and so on. So you saw that. You saw the pace of it. So overall, I mean, that was kind of, you know, really good to watch. I mean, no surprise. He did in Atlanta. This is a Super Bowl coach. He had one of the best defenses for years in the NFL in Dallas by doing things this way. But, of course, you know, all eyes are on Jaden Daniels in that quarterback situation. In the day I was there, it was weird. The offense had four pre-snap penalties and team drills and things like that. So it's a little sloppy. But in terms of Jaden, you can just see the talent. Now it's going to be how they mesh his skill set into how Cliff Kingsbury wants to run this offense.
So, Steve, what do you make in general, because you've been doing this for a minute now, of kind of the trend lines in terms of preseason, training camp? I mean, I'm old enough to remember two-a-days in the heat and everybody, you know, their heads were ringing and it was like water is for quitters. Obviously, it's a different time now. Where does Washington sort of fit into that spectrum of kind of the new school?
I mean, it's very much similar. That's all across the NFL. I mean, because it's what the NFL, it's, you know, the trend word you've heard the past 3 or 4 years is the ramp up period. And so you see that kind of going, you know, one, make sure to take care of these guys, ramp them up so they're not pulling hamstrings on day four of camp and stuff like that. So they're right in alignment with that. I mean, nothing different than most teams.
Steve, you left off your answer on Daniels by saying it's about now fitting in with Kingsbury. I don't know if you got to talk to Cliff, but what did you figure out about their relationship and how that fit is going?
Yeah, I didn't get to talk to Cliff, but everything I'm hearing is it's great. You know, you always hear about quarterbacks being the first one in, the last one out. That's the standard operation. It's news when you hear otherwise, right? So he's a gym rat. They've given him the key fob as to where he can get in the building at all hours and study film. That's something that I found out in talking to some of the coaches, because, you know, at LSU, they wouldn't allow people in the building after a certain time, but he was always trying to sneak in. Well, you know, that's something the Commanders found out in their pre-draft process, and once they draft him, they're like, here, you can come in and look at film and do everything you need to do at all the time. So he's going to work. So now the collaboration with Cliff, who's a great guy to get along with, right? You know, he really works quarterbacks. And so that relationship, you know, seems very good for now. It's now a matter of Cliff figuring out what they want to do with Jaden, what they want to do with the pass game versus the run game, and things like that. And that's what has to be worked out during training camp and the preseason, because we know Cliff historically likes to throw the ball more than he likes to run it. But when you've got a rookie quarterback with an offensive line that's still kind of in flux, you may want to flip the script a little bit and pound it a little bit more then you're throwing it if the situations in the game allow.
Steve Weish, NFL Network, with us here on Grant and Danny. I wanted to follow up on that about Kingsbury. We don't know. Like, we've seen air raid stuff, obviously, going back to Texas. We saw kind of a modified version of that in Arizona, and you mentioned some of the running totals when you have Kyler Murray. That certainly helps that, right? But they line up in shotgun. Is that because Kyler Murray's, you know, 5'6", 5'7", or is it just because that's what he likes? What's this offense going to look like? Go deeper into that, Steve, do you think?
Yeah, that's going to be what we all need to be watching, because, as you mentioned, when it was Kyler Murray in Arizona, and I spent a lot of time down there when Kyler was a rookie. That's what Kyler was used to. He was, you know, and he is smaller. And a lot of times, these smaller quarterbacks, you put him in shotgun so they can see the field pre-snap and make their predetermined reads. What I saw when I was out there Saturday with Jaden is that he was under center, shotgun, pistol. So they're running three different formations with him. And so these are things that will allow them to do things in the run game with Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler. There are things that will allow Jaden Daniels to do things with his legs, whether it's rollout, bootleg, keepers, RPOs, you know, and if they're just going to play some standard under the center football. And again, this is the stuff over the next couple of weeks. Everyone who's there need to really keep an eye out on, okay, what really works, what works in what situations, what's Jaden most comfortable in, because I think you're going to see them use all three of these types of formations depending on what personnel is in the game.
Steve Weish, NFL Media and NFL Network, with us here on Grant and Danny. Just came through Ashburn at Commanders Camp, wanted to tap into what he learned about Washington. I saw you guys had a sit-down with Austin Ekeler, which brings me to one of the other big storylines here. I mean, this is a very new roster. They signed over 20 players, many of them to 1 or 2 year veteran deals, may or may not be around long term, but to fix the culture a little bit. How much tread do you think Ekeler has left on the tires? What kind of role do you envision for him?
It'll be the same type of role that he had with the Chargers when they had Melvin Gordon. You know, Melvin was a big, powerful back, much like Brian Robinson, could hit the home run. Ekeler comes in third down, you know, second and long, certain types of situations, because this is a guy who's dynamic in the open field. I mean, last year he was slowed down some by an ankle injury, wasn't nearly as effective as they wanted him to be. But, you know, you look at the two different body types as well. I mean, that is what you call the change of pace, as they like to say. Plus, you can flex Ekeler out, you know, as a flanker, slot type guy. So he still adds a lot. Yeah, he's a guy who's got some tread, but he's also a guy who wasn't getting 320 touches a year either. So he will absolutely be a matchup problem, especially when you got a dual threat quarterback like you do.
What about, and similar question here, Zach Ertz? He seems to be popping in training camp a lot. I think a lot of us in town kind of assumed he gets hurt a lot. He's going to be a good mentor for the young quarterback. I mean, is there any chance he's still a really impactful, high-volume, targeted player in the passing game?
You know, that's a great question, because when I was talking to Dan Quinn before practice, he said, you know, Zach Ertz is such a glue guy. You know, he's one of those veterans. And, you know, like you mentioned, they brought a lot of guys on these one-year deals to help the culture. Like, he's one of those guys. And he was saying the one thing we're seeing, and again, this is before they put the pads on, was that he still got it, like in the red zone areas and things like that. He's not going to be someone they're necessarily going to count on to be their every down guy, but situationally, if he stays healthy, that's the issue, the durability issue. If he stays healthy, he's going to be able to contribute. So, look, what they're trying to do, and it seems like it's going to be a slow build, I think they're going to be competitive just because Dan Quinn tends to really turn things around quickly in terms of this culture and building and just getting guys in the right mindset. But having a guy like Zach Ertz to be a bailout for a young quarterback, that's huge. And so I think that's another important cog that they were very methodical and particular about when they put this roster together.
Steve, one more on Washington before we go to some of the other stops that you've had on your tour here. Off mic, maybe off air, right? You're talking to coaches, talking to players. I know we've had, Grant and I have been lucky enough to be able to do that here locally in town, whether it's GMs or managers, coaches, et cetera. Sometimes they just can't stop gushing about somebody. Like, wait till you see, wait till you see, wait till you see. Anybody like that come up here for Washington that maybe we're not thinking of out in the public eye just yet that they just couldn't stop talking about?
Well, Frankie Louvu is one of them. and St. Juste at corner. You know, they said we're going to talk about some other guys. You know, Jeremy Chinn is someone. Some of the defensive guys who really pop. Bobby Wagner, of course. But we know the secondary is an area, you know, of concern, that linebacker crew. But Luvu and St. Juste were some names that absolutely came up a few times in some of the conversations I had.
The chief national reporter at NFL Network, Steve Wyche. NFL Network's Inside Training Camp coverage airs daily through August 7th. They're in the meat of it right now. It starts each day at 12 noon Eastern. All right, Steve, I want to hit a couple of the other teams that you visited with. I know right after Washington, you hit the Ravens. I don't know if you were there after Lamar Jackson got back on the field from his illness, but buy or sell this. With the Bengals getting Burrow back, the Browns being tough customers, adding Mike Vrabel to their staff, some of the moves they made, and then also, you know, the Steelers, their quarterback situation's in flux, but all they do is win 10 games under Tomlin every year. Brutal division. I think that the schedule for the Ravens is really difficult. Their quarterback schedule is one of the most arduous in football. They lost a ton on their defensive coaching staff and some players on that side of the ball. I think they could take a step back. It doesn't seem like anybody nationally is really predicting that. What do you make of that?
I don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be there yesterday when they were in pads. It was a grueling 3-hour practice. You know,
3 hours? Lamar was the
second through almost 3 hours. You
wow.
know, that's including kicking game and whatnot. So, you know, you're doing special teams and breaks. But it was one of those things where Harbaugh is like, okay, let's see what you got. And they're loaded, man. Their roster, you know, they've got to work through replacing three starters on the offensive line, right? But you know, they lose someone, inside linebacker Patrick Green to Pittsburgh. Trenton Simpson's right there. That's the dude everybody's talking about. Yeah, we got Roquan Smith. He's the superstar, but his Robin is no joke. So, you know, look, the division being great, that's nothing new. Right? It's been this way for a couple of years. You know, Cleveland's been on the come up. Cincinnati's played in a Super Bowl. You know, the Steelers are the Steelers. This is nothing new. So we can sit here and say, wow, this looks bad. This is challenging for the Ravens. They're the standard, right? When we talk, when we in the media and whatnot talk about, oh, what teams do we think are going to get back to the Super Bowl? You know, Kansas City, you know, Detroit, San Francisco. We never mention the Ravens because we just anticipate them being there because they're there every year. They're always in the hunt. And I think that's going to be the case this year. Yeah, sure, they could take a step back because the division's good, but those teams also have to play Baltimore. So I think getting Derrick Henry and being able to do some things offensively that they haven't done before, are, you know, in the second year of Todd Monken, is going to open some things up. But I think defensively, they're still going to be right there among the top two or three best teams in the NFL.
Steve, I know you've been to Chargers camp as well. Speaking of Harbaugh's, I just imagine yep. you could just sit down and leave a tape recorder behind, and Jim Harbaugh would fill it up for hours and hours with his own musings and like passion sayings about life and stuff. What'd you make of that group that's also kind of in transition?
Yeah, if you were to leave the tape on with Jim Harbaugh, if you can figure out what point A to point B to point C
yeah.
to point D means, man, you have solved all the world's problems. Look, it's going to be interesting with the Chargers because Jim Harbaugh knows how to win. Like, you watch them practice, you talk about structure, and you talk about just a great formula. It is a beautiful thing to watch. From the fact that he has them wearing their game uniforms at practice because he wants them on game days to feel just like they did in practice. It's a real unique kind of deep thought, but it's simplistic as well. You know, it's a year in transition. They're probably going to win more games than they had last year. Their quarterback is just a stud. But when you look at their offensive skill position, you're saying to yourself, wow, you know, they're counting on J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, two guys with durability issues coming over from the Ravens. So those are the running backs. You know, Harbaugh wants to run the ball. You know, they also have Isaiah Spiller there who couldn't really crack the rotation much in his 2 years prior. Defensively, I mean, their defensive front is great. You still have Bosa and Mack. You know, people forget that Khalil Mack had like 16 and a half sacks last year, but he's still playing at an elite level. They've got some standout linebackers, some really good guys in the secondary. So, you know, this is to me the foundational kind of plant your flag in the ground year. They're probably going to be close to 500, and then they're steadily going to build, you know, where Jim Harbaugh, again, he wins everywhere he goes and he wins to the highest level. Are they going to eventually usurp Kansas City? We'll see. May take some time, but I don't think this will be the year. I don't think this is going to be the team that all of a sudden is going to make that Houston Texans type of jump just because of the skill position and playmaker type of guys you just don't see it like you see with other real competitive teams.
You also broadcast an inside training camp from Raiders camp. Who's going to be their starting quarterback? Is it going to be Gardner Minshew they brought in, or Aiden O'Connell, who was the guy second half of last year?
Doesn't sound like Antonio Pierce right now is thrilled with the situation. You know, in a conversation I had with Antonio Pierce a couple months ago, he said everything runs through Aiden O'Connell. And when I was there, which was the first or second day of camp, it was Aiden O'Connell getting the majority of snaps. But you heard Antonio Pierce come out, you know, before they got the pads on today and say, okay, enough of the competition. Will somebody please seize the role? And to me, it's not so much as who's the better player, but who's going to get the other 10 guys in the huddle to play hard for them. And that's, you know, that's the big thing there under Luke Getsy, the old Bears OC, longtime Packers coach who was with Devontae Adams in Green Bay. You know, he's the new OC. Now he wants one of these guys to get a little bit more cutthroat and take it. I think when push comes to shove, it'll be Aiden O'Connell. But we'll see how long that lasts. We'll see if he finishes the season.
Steve, I know you're headed to Detroit next. They don't play outside until November 3rd, by my count, at Green Bay. And they play
that?
Yeah, only three games outside all year.
How's that possible?
Rams, Bucks home, Cardinals dome, Seattle at home. Dallas dome, Vikings dome, Tennessee home at Green Bay November 3rd.
That's got to be a record.
Yeah, and only three outside games all year at Green Bay, at Chicago, and at San Fran.
Let Goff cook.
I think this is good. Like, I don't think people are talking enough about this. They're going to be like those Breeze Saints teams and score a million points.
Well, look, this is why you or the old Tony Dungy Colts team. I mean, this is why you build your team a certain way to get a lead, and then you turn your defense loose. The thing is, they don't have Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, right? Or they don't have, you know, Will Smith and some of those guys that the Saints had to really get after the quarterback. But what they do have is a mashing ground game. You know, people don't talk enough about that because you look at Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta and a lot of the receiving threats that they have. But, you know, when you see, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery and the way that Ben Johnson, man, he'll line up two tight ends and have two running backs out there on third and 10, the team's in nickel defense. They're like, we got our big boys in here. We're going to run it for 12 yards on you. Right? They've got one of the best play designers and personnel schemers in the NFL. They're loaded with talent. You look at what the money that they have invested in their offensive line. You know, they just paid Penei Sewell. They just paid Taylor Decker. They've got Frank Ragnow at center. They get Kevin Zeitler in there at guard. They're ready to mash, even though they are built to be an indoor football team, which, again, you think a team's throwing the ball all over the place. They are built to play in any type of climate or any type of surface. And I think they are really knocking on the door to make a push to the Super Bowl. They were there last year. They just couldn't hang on against the Niners in the NFC Championship.
Steve, I always enjoy our conversations, and hopefully we'll cross paths this football season in person as well. Thank you so much for the time, and enjoy the rest of your camp coverage. It's been really good.
Hey, appreciate you guys. Take care.
Thank you, Steve.
Be well. There's Steve Wyche, one of the good guys in the industry. Again, NFL Network's Inside Training Camp every day through August 7th, right around noon Eastern. He is their chief national reporter. One of the big stories that they covered when they were here and talked about was Jaden Daniels splitting reps with Marcus Mariota. You and I both a little bit annoyed by that, but don't think it's a big deal. When would it start to be a big deal? Let's get into that next on Grant and Danny.
I think it's fair to allow that to happen. You know, kind of did the same thing with Rivera, and then you see over time, you know, the concerns and the flaws, et cetera. So, yeah, maybe this is one of them, but for now I'm not seeing it. I mean, I will say this, like when they get to play the Jets next week in the first joint practice, if Daniels isn't getting the majority of the first team reps, then, okay, we're like, wait, what's going on here, right? Because that's going to be the next step beyond just practicing against your own team or facing somebody else completely different.
That's Ben Standing of The Athletic, who was on the show yesterday. We were discussing the fact that Jaden Daniels is still not clearly out-repping Marcus Mariota. In fact, if you were to just watch the practices not knowing anything, you'd assume Mariota was the starter and not Daniels. And he acknowledged, like Danny and I have acknowledged on the show, obviously nobody thinks that Marcus Mariota is a starter or is competing to be a starter. this is the Jaden Daniels show, but they're just not repping things out that way yet. That'll change soon. And as he put it, by this time next week, if it hasn't changed, okay, then that gets a little more ridiculous. And as he went on to say, he'd start asking some tougher questions about it. But right now, it just seems like their plan to ramp him up and to get him ready for game week, as it were, next week. This was when we talked to him about the split on the quarterback reps, Mariota versus Daniels, earlier in the conversation.
The thing, like, this, really in this camp, but kind of the last couple days in particular, you know, we talked so much the previous 4 years about position flex and all that stuff, but it's even more notable here because, and what I'm saying is that, like, the first team is not necessarily the first team, right? I mean, like, today, for example, the left guard was Michael Dieter, who's viewed as the backup center. Third-round pick Brandon Coleman was starting at one of the tackle spots with Lucas at the other one. I don't know that we think that's going to be the case. The receivers have bounced around. So, has he gone first in the quarterback reps? Sometimes, but it's been more Mariota overall in camp.
I don't have any problem with that in a lot of positions, and I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily to move guys around, see how players play next to other guys, especially on the lines, rotational positions defensively, you know, whether it's linebacker or secondary, something like that.
Yeah, you'll probably be in a November game where you need Michael Dieter to play right guard or center in the same lineup or something. You know what I mean?
And we're early enough in camp that actually all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Dan Quinn would say, okay, then leave me alone about quarterback. I view quarterback a lot different. And I view the number two overall pick, who's the Heisman Trophy winner, a lot different. And this is now just me kind of shouting at the ocean standing on the beach. But man, would it be nice if we could just stop pretending and give Jaden Daniels all the reps.
If the question is, when does it get annoying? I'm there now. I mean, I'm here. I'm annoyed.
Annoyed, yes. I don't think the question is, when does it get annoying? Like, it was annoying to me the first time Marcus Mariota started a day with drills with the first team. Annoying doesn't really matter, right? Annoying is nothing. Annoying just means you would do it differently and you disagree. When does it become counterproductive? When does it become problematic? Sounds too strong, but like, what's above annoying?
Right.
Like, this is dumb.
Is it an issue?
It's not dumb yet. It's a little annoying, and you'd do it differently. But at some point, it becomes actually detrimental to the development.
I think it is a small issue right now, and each day it becomes slightly larger.
When does it become a big enough issue that we should actually be upset about it? Because I've been very clear to say no one should be making a big deal about this. We're on the radio. We give opinions. We call balls and strikes. We talk about what we agree and what we disagree with. And it's a beautiful thing that we get to just do that about football.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a win for everybody, and we're happy about it. So a small disagreement with the coaching staff is not the end of the world, and hopefully they'll be right way more often, and we'll be wrong way more often. In the past, that wasn't the case, sadly.
Yep.
But this is a better, more advanced, more professional staff, ideally, and their front office is competent, and hopefully they'll be right way more often. But I guess that's my question rhetorically is, when does this no longer get filed into the, I wish it wasn't this way drawer, and now it's, what in the hell is going on drawer? Because we're not there yet, but a week from today we will be. So that means there's a line we're approaching at some point. This was standing more on the quarterback, I'm not going to call a competition. I refuse to do that. But thing, whatever this thing is.
I've certainly been on the case of, I don't care what they say, I'm not going to buy the notion of competition. And I don't really think Dan Quinn's trying to sell it that hard. But they think this is the way to go to give, I don't know if it's more about giving Mariota some work with the ones, because you never know, or if it's just, hey, we don't want to just keep throwing Daniels out there with the quote-unquote first team, because then it means he's the starter. At some point they'll say he is, but they're not ready to do it now. And like I said, they've really been mixing and matching far more than a lot of you remember with Rivera.
He was just spitballing, but that would be a hilarious reason for them not to do it, because then it means people will know he's the starter. Dan Quinn opened his first presser by saying, if you remember, he said, I'm not going to pretend like that's a secret. He said that. He's like, there's no secrets here. I'm not going to pretend like you guys don't know what's going on. Kind of acknowledge there's an elephant over there, but they're moving forward as if there's not an elephant over there.
Yeah, it's we are, for me, really close to the this is now a problem line.
Monday is my line in the sand because they play the game. Is next week's game on the 10th of August? Is that Friday?
I believe it's Saturday.
Saturday, okay. But it's as of Monday, it's game week.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, they'll begin what is an earnest, legitimate preparation for that game. As of Monday, if Jaden Daniels misses out on first-team reps with the starters, assuming he's going to start in the game, that's when I'm now officially moving the needle to, come on, man. This is silly.
Yeah, for me, it's before then. Because I understand your point. So it's game
that's
week.
That's not that far away.
This is my point. I'm knocking on the door. I'm just outside going, do I have the right address? Let me check my text. Let me check the invite. Like, we're now bordering on we're wasting practice time. We're wasting it through some weird crusade of proving some kind of point that doesn't exist anymore. This is the league. You have a stopwatch. The instant they go with the second overall pick, the Washington Commanders, change the name, should be or is Jaden Daniels, quarterback LSU. The stopwatch starts. You got a window. There's a window to get him as good as possible, as quick as possible, to have as much success as you can before you have to pay him what will probably be $77 million a year in 5 years, if it works at all. Unless it doesn't work. And then we're doing a different dance. But that's the deal. You're now wasting time. It is a waste of time to have Marcus Mariota do anything other than clap loudly, other than to point at the Microsoft Surface while wearing a visor. Like, you're doing some sort of principled thing where you can't give it to a rookie. Well, yeah, okay, cool. We got a couple hours of that. Let's do a couple days in T-shirts of that. If he can't do it, you need to know that.
Well, here's the other good news, maybe. It's funny to say this. With the reps that he's gotten, again, not that this is a competition, and I shouldn't even use the C word, because we all know it isn't. But it's not like it's gone all that well. According to the people that are out there taking notes on these practices, Daniels has been decidedly better than Mariota. In fact, if there's such a thing as, you know, who's better, it's between Mariota and Driscoll, essentially,
mm-hmm.
in the 2 and 3 spots on the depth chart, not a top of the depth chart thing, which speaks well to Daniels that he looks better as a rookie in training camp than a veteran. But I just think that's worth noting, too.
It is.
Which is to say, that if he was he looked great. Like last year at camp, there were times where Jacoby Brissett, I remember, really looked comfortable. And you could see that's a pro quarterback mm-hmm. who was a starter this past season in Cleveland.
Who learns a new system every, 12 months. Yeah.
And I remember thinking, Jacoby Brissett can run this offense. And then he played in the preseason and he was nails, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
In at least one of those games, I remember he was fantastic. And maybe Mariota will look like that in August against backups in exhibition games. I don't know. But the fact that supposedly, and I haven't seen it with my own eyes, I'll be out there this week, but haven't been yet. The idea being that Daniels has been head and shoulders better than Mariota. If you're just looking at the thing blindly, don't care who was taken second, who the veteran is. That, I think, also should give them a little more urgency and aggression to say, what are we really doing here? The guy that should be playing is the guy that's better anyway.
And I know part of it's my own bias and annoyance at playing pretend, because that's what this is. It's some sort of weird pretend game that I don't have time for. There's a limited clock.
I'm going to be the psychologist, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Your issue with this, and I tend to agree with you in this case, but you have a hard time, I think, with anything that is like the, how am I going to describe it? The locker room, like what the coach's relationship with his players and the somewhat antiquated idea that, I'm managing people and I've got to do right by the 53 guys in that room and what they view as traditionally the way to do it. In this case, that materializes as, I can't just hand this guy the keys. Sure you can. The Bears did it with Caleb Williams.
It's very easy.
Any of their players quit over it? Any of their guys turn over their jerseys and say, I don't want to be on this team if we just hand rookies. No, that's stupid.
That's part of the job is to say, hey, veteran, if he's not there yet, help him get there. Right? This is the future. Sorry about it. When you select somebody number 2 overall at the quarterback spot, That's what matters. Stop pretending it's something else. Stop pretending it's the guard spot. Stop pretending it's the fourth linebacker. Stop pretending it's what Quan Martin's going to do. It's not. This is what matters. His development is 10 billion times more important than what anybody else does, good, bad, or indifferent. Stop pretending.
And that's why the comparisons from Stanley to the other positions, while accurate, are probably a little hollow for me, because I don't really care what they're doing in the secondary. Quarterback shouldn't be done that way. Tony, who is on Twitter, Redskins crazy one, I don't know if Commander's crazy one, was taken. But my guess is he just wants to stick with the other one. He says, my hope is that they are both getting equal amount of reps with the ones. This way, there won't be a drop-off if Daniels gets hurt. They could still get done this season what they want. If they're, and it's not, to be clear, I think too highly of this staff to even assume. But if their logic was, let's make sure our backup quarterback is ready to be almost as good as our starter and split some reps for that reason, that's a really terrible reason to do something. All of their prioritization should be going into Jaden Daniels and making him the best starter possible for the beginning of the year. We're 20 minutes away from the Major League Baseball trade deadline. We're expecting a Dylan Floro deal from the Nationals. We are on Kyle Finnegan watch as well. Will they be trading their closer? They've been linked to a bevy of teams today on the Finnegan front. We had Andrew Golden of the Washington Post tell us that he thinks there is a better chance than not that Finnegan gets dealt. So we are on watch now, 20 minutes ahead of the trade deadline. Keep it right here on 106.7 The Fan. We are on Trade Deadline Watch in studio. Grant and Danny on The Fan taking you up to 6:30. Major League Baseball trade deadline 13 minutes away. I'd be shocked if Dylan Floro doesn't get traded. As of now, he's still a National, best we could tell. And we're 50-50 on whether or not Kyle Finnegan gets moved, but we are now up against the clock here. It was a couple of years ago you and I were sitting in this studio right ahead of, I believe, the 4 p.m. deadline at that time. And 4 o'clock rolled around, and we said they were done, and then word came out at like 4:02. Actually, they got a deal done. John Lester's getting traded. And you and I are like, somebody traded for John Lester? What bag of baseballs are they getting back for him? What half-eaten granola bar did someone ship to D.C.? Are they going to go to FedEx and package it up? And it turned out to be Lane Thomas, pretty inexplicably, which is crazy. Danny, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you over the last couple days? You didn't make any trips, did you?
No, no trips.
Have you made any big purchases? Like, if I looked at your credit card bill, have there any huge purchases that you've made?
Why, yes, there have been. Why do you ask?
Are you serious?
Did your wife put you up to this?
No.
I mean, wait a minute. Let me try that again. Did my wife talk to you? It's not mine. I'm ruining the bit. Go ahead.
Okay. A Star Wars costume. One of the most famous outfits in film history, apparently.
What?
Just went for bid.
What is it? Is Boba Fett? Is Boba Fett.
A bikini.
Oh, Leia's bikini. Yep.
And bikini plates.
Yep.
Hip rings.
Yep.
An armlet and a bracelet.
Yep.
Princess Leia's bikini.
Yeah.
And by the way, can you imagine the guy that bought this thing? I mean, hanging out with that guy, what that must be like.
He's about 6 foot, 222, lives in Fairfax.
So my question, Danny, is...
It's me, by the way. I don't know if that was clear.
Did you make the purchase for Princess Leia's bikini?
No, it's too rich for my blood. I guarantee that went for a lot.
So let's actually play the game here. If we don't mind, Darius, I'll take a little music. How much money did some nerd, and I feel good about saying he was a nerd.
No problem there. Cosign.
Spend on the bikini worn by Carrie Fisher in Return of the Jedi as Princess Leia? And if Danny had the money, would he have done it? So let's just say you were...
Like, money's no object, because yeah. I'm so cheap and
you're
frugal
Elon
in general.
Musk, yeah. Okay? You will not feel it. How much would you be willing to spend for that bikini?
I want, like, you're going to be like, oh my God, Danny's joking around. Like, what's his problem? Ha ha, funny. I want you to look at my face. Whatever it took. Do you understand? Whatever it took. And any time that I was fortunate enough to have a lady in the domicile, here's what we're doing. You're going to put that on. That's
no.
The goal. That, yes, that's
so
the gold bikini.
Your wife is going to wear Princess Leia's bikini.
Yep.
Just to like watch TV or
all doing it all the time.
Doing what all the time?
She's gonna wear that gold bikini. I hope. I would ask politely.
But if she said no, then you spent a lot of money for nothing.
Yeah. I would just ask relentlessly. I would never stop asking.
Actually a little bit of a...
Is it a fantasy you're asking? 100% it is. What else you got?
No way.
Yes. Yes.
All right. How do I say this? What year did that movie come out?
83. Yep.
How old were you?
4.
Okay. So you were pretty young.
But I saw it on VHS first and then DVD.
Danny Rouye.
Yeah.
Did you get Sice?
That's my first foray into that sort of... into that space, I would say, of fantasies. Princess Leia in the gold bikini, Alyssa Milano on Who's the Boss,
no way.
And Kelly Kapowski on Saved by the Bell.
So this was
the triumvirate.
This was part of the Danny Rouye
introduction.
Steamed up bank, if you will.
Yes. Yep.
You close your eyes, you saw this bikini.
That is correct.
All right. Darius, how much money do you think a nerd spent for this bikini?
Oh, man. Nerds are willing to spend some good money on some stuff, man. I'm gonna say, before
you guess, so it's not a you're not crazy. It's not like $1 million. I mean, this is
it's the prop from the actual movie, right?
It is. It's the prop from the actual movie. That's all I'll say. You guys can guess after.
I'm gonna go $80,000.
Okay, that's a great guess. It's a good starting point.
I feel like you're trying to throw us off the game because Princess Leia. I don't know too much about her, but I know she's a pretty big deal in Star Wars. I'd probably say $175,000.
Okay. $175,000.
I'm going to say $375,000.
And you would have paid that?
Yeah, easily.
Ryan Clary on the nose. At auction, the gold bikini worn by Princess Leia. I'll spin around and show you the picture, although Danny doesn't need to see it.
I've seen it plenty of times.
He might have it memorized.
Thank you very much.
$175,000.
Great Friends episode where Ross got Rachel to wear it one time.
What would your wife do? Like, she knows who she married. She knows what you are. She knows what you're not.
Yep.
You're not a cop. If she's like looking at the credit card bill, or I guess she just sees a withdrawal from the account.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, what did you spend $175,000 on? And you say,
oh, you'll never guess.
You're not gonna.
No, seriously, you'll never
you're
guess.
You're not gonna believe this. But then,
a bit of an impulse purchase.
You go running in. You're running into your room. You come back out, and you've just got the gold bikini. It's the one Princess Leia actually wore. Is that an immediate divorce? Do you think she's like, what happens?
Yeah, you're joking around, but you can't have an instantaneous divorce. You have to go through a process. But I think that'd be it.
Does the process start in that moment?
I think we would begin the process there.
Because even though she knows, like, you're a bit of a goose and you bought someone the Starlight Pendant of Gorador, that this is a bridge too far.
You can't spend almost 200 grand. Or was it over 200 grand? What was it?
175.
Yeah, you can't spend 175 grand without asking and then pop that as a surprise and that's all you have.
And on a bikini, no less.
You can't do that.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Trade deadline in 7 minutes. Let's step away so we are back in time to figure out exactly what the Nats did or did not get done. We are Grant and Danny until 6:30 live on the Fan. We are on Trade Deadline Watch in studio. Grant and Danny on the Fan taking you up to 6:30. Major League Baseball trade deadline 13 minutes away. I'd be shocked if Dylan Floro doesn't get traded. As of now, he's still a National, best we could tell. And we're 50-50 on whether or not Kyle Finnegan gets moved, but we are now up against the clock here. It was a couple of years ago you and I were sitting in this studio right ahead of, I believe, the 4 p.m. deadline at that time. And 4 o'clock rolled around, and we said they were done, and then word came out at like 4:02.
Uh-huh.
Actually, they got a deal done. John Lester's getting traded. And you and I are like, somebody traded for John Lester? What bag of baseballs are they getting back for him? What half-eaten granola bar did someone ship to D.C.? Are they going to go to FedEx and package it up? And it turned out to be Lane Thomas, pretty inexplicably, which is crazy. Danny, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you over the last couple of days? You didn't make any trips, did you?
No, no trips.
Have you made any big purchases? Like, if I looked at your credit card bill, have there been any huge purchases that you've made?
Why, yes, there have been. Why do you ask?
Are you serious?
Did your wife put you up to this?
No.
I mean, wait a minute. Let me try that again. Did my wife talk to you? Never mind. I'm ruining the bit. Go ahead.
Okay. a Star Wars costume. One of the most famous outfits in film history, apparently.
What?
Just went for bid.
What is it? Is Boba Fett? Is Boba Fett?
A bikini.
Oh, Leia's bikini. Yep.
And bikini plates.
Yep.
Hip rings.
Yep.
An armlet and a bracelet.
Yep.
Princess Leia's bikini.
Yeah.
And by the way, can you imagine the guy that bought this thing? I mean, hanging out with that guy, what that must be like.
He's about 6 foot, 222, lives in Fairfax.
So my question, Danny, is...
It's me, by the way. I don't know if that was clear.
Did you make the purchase for Princess Leia's bikini?
No, it's too rich for my blood. I guarantee that went for a lot.
So let's actually play the game here. If we don't mind, Darius, I'll take a little music. How much money did some nerd... And I feel good about saying he was a nerd.
No problem there. Cosign.
Spend on the bikini worn by Carrie Fisher in Return of the Jedi as Princess Leia. And if Danny had the money, would he have done it? So let's just say you were...
Like money's no object because I'm so cheap and frugal
Elon
in general.
Musk, yeah. Okay? You will not feel it. How much would you be willing to spend for that bikini?
I want, like, you're going to be like, oh, my God, Danny's joking around. Like, what's his problem? Ha, ha, funny. I want you to look at my face. Whatever it took. Do you understand? Whatever it took. And any time that I was fortunate enough to have a lady in the domicile, here's what we're doing. You're going to put that on. That's
no.
The goal. That, yes. That's
so
the gold bikini.
Your wife is going to wear Princess Leia's bikini.
Yep.
Just to, like, watch TV? Or
We're doing it all the time.
Doing what all the time?
She's going to wear that gold bikini, I hope. I would ask politely.
But what if she said no?
Mm.
Then you spent a lot of money for nothing.
Yeah. I would just ask relentlessly. I would
so
never
stop
asking.
So is actually a little bit of a...
Is it a fantasy you're asking? 100% it is. What else you got?
No way.
Yes. Yes.
All right. How do I say this? What year did that movie come out?
Return? 83.
83?
Yep.
How old were you?
4.
Okay, so you were pretty young.
But I saw it on VHS first,
so
and then DVD.
Danny Rouillet.
Yeah.
Did you get Sice?
That's my first foray into that sort of into that space. I would say of fantasies, Princess Leia in the gold bikini, Alyssa Milano on Who's the Boss,
no way.
And Kelly Kapowski on Saved by the Bell.
So this was,
that's the triumvirate.
This was part of the Danny Rouillet
introduction,
steamed up bank, if you
yes.
will.
Yep.
You close your eyes, you saw
yes.
this bikini.
That is correct.
All right. Darius, how much money do you think a nerd spent for this bikini?
Oh, man. Nerds are willing to spend some good money on some stuff, man. I'm gonna say it's...
Before you guess, so it's not a... You're not crazy. It's not like $1 million. I mean, this like...
It's the prop from the actual movie, right?
It is. It's the prop from the actual movie. That's all I'll say. You guys can guess after.
I'm going to go $80,000.
Okay, that's a great guess. It's a good starting point.
I feel like you're trying to throw us off the game because Princess Leia, I don't know too much about her, but I know she's a pretty big deal in Star Wars. I'd probably say $175,000.
Okay, $175,000.
I'm going to say $375,000.
And you would have paid that?
Yeah, easily.
Ryan Clary on the nose. At auction, the gold bikini worn by Princess Leia. I'll spin around and show you the picture, although Danny doesn't need to see it.
Again. I've seen it plenty
of times.
He
might have it memorized.
Thank you very much.
$175,000.
Great Friends episode where Ross got Rachel to wear it one time.
What would your wife do? Like, she knows who she married. She knows what you are. She knows what you're not.
Yep.
You're not a cop. If she's, like, looking at the credit card bill, or I guess she just sees a withdrawal from the account.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, what did you spend $175,000 on? And you say,
oh. You'll never guess.
You're not gonna.
No, seriously, you'll never
you're
guess.
You're not gonna believe this. But then,
bit of an impulse purchase.
You go running in. You're running into your room. You come back out, and you've just got the gold bikini. It's the one Princess Leia actually wore. Is that an immediate divorce? Do you think she's like, what happens?
Yeah, you're joking around, but you can't have an instantaneous divorce. You have to go through a process. But I think that'd be it.
Does the process start in that moment?
I think we would begin the process there.
Because even though she knows, like, you're a bit of a goose and you bought someone the Starlight Pendant of Gorador, that this is a bridge too far.
You can't spend almost 200 grand. Or was it over 200 grand? What was it?
175.
Yeah, you can't spend 175 grand without asking and then pop that as a surprise and that's all you have.
and on a bikini, no less.
You can't do that.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, trade deadline in 7 minutes. Let's step away so we are back in time to figure out exactly what the Nats did or did not get done. We are Grant and Danny until 6:30 live on the Fan.